In the final chapter of John's Gospel, we find a fascinating exchange between Jesus and Peter that exposes several profound lessons on life. At first glance, their back-and-forth conversation appears confrontational, and Peter seems to be exasperated with Jesus. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll invites us to follow along in John 21. Chuck will help us understand the implications behind Jesus' repetitious questions. Three times Jesus asked, "Peter, do you love me?" Why would Jesus be so persistent with Peter? In case you missed Friday's introduction, Chuck begins with helpful review.
As we come to the New Testament, we find four accounts to an enigma. It is the birth, life, ministry, death, and resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth, the greatest story ever told. The first three men who wrote of it wrote from a predictable standpoint. They wrote pretty much at the same era and pretty much from the same perspective, give or take a number of details. They were predictable. One man, however, who knew the inner workings, the inner circle, the nerve center, the inner sanctum of conversations and events, waited 60 years. Do you hear that? 60 years after the death of Jesus before he ever wrote a word. During that waiting period, he thought long and hard and deep about some of the unique experiences and conversations that had never been made known. And from his perspective, he has added a wealth of information that we have been enjoying for now 41 Sundays. We turn to John 21 to another unique account not found in Matthew or Mark or Luke. I'll tell you why. New Testament scholars tell us that those three gospels are the synoptic gospels. The word soon in Greek, S-U-N, means together with. It's the idea of putting something together or seeing something together. Optic obviously means that which is seen or viewed. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are viewed together. That is, they viewed in a collective, similar fashion the miracles, the parables, the birth, the death, the resurrection of Jesus. But when you come to John, you have an altogether unique account. There's not a genealogy. There are not the parables. There are not the events that you're familiar with in the first three accounts. But there are, in this gospel account, personal, behind-the-scenes, unique conversations. That suddenly, when you put that together with the other three, you have a fairly composite picture of what must have taken place. Actually, the Gospels are not lengthy accounts. You could read all of them in probably less than 10 hours. They're like four slender pamphlets, which are inspired of God and preserved for our instruction. We have almost come to the conclusion in our study of John, and as we come to chapter 21, I am pleased that it ends on a personal note. There will be one more message, and then we will complete our study. But look with me, if you will, to John 21 and verse 15, and you will get once again, a reminder of how unique John really is. In verses 15 through 23, we have Peter learning three lessons. We want to learn them with him. And as is John's custom, they are very practical. I'll have to draw on your memory of last Sunday and hope that you have not forgotten that they were by the sea sitting together in a little group, Jesus has probed Peter's love. He has asked him on two occasions, "Do you love me?" Using the word for the highest form of love, Peter's response has been, "Yes," but he's qualified his answer by using a term from John's pen that means, "I'm fond of you." Now, the third time, Jesus asked yet again. It occurred to me as I was sitting here this morning, only those that sit through three services can appreciate the same thing being said three times. And I hope their response is not like Peter's, because he was grieved. Because he said the third time, "Are you fond of me? Are you just fond of me?" And Peter's response is, "Lord, you know everything. You know by experience, that's the best I can say. No longer, Lord, am I making these great, gigantic promises about how everybody else may fail, but I won't. I've got to say, Lord, the honest, transparent expression of my life is, I'm fond of you." And to Peter's magnificent amazement, Jesus said, "Tend my sheep." Now, let's learn the lesson and then let's apply it even further to our lives. Stop and hear his message. Let's do that. First, lesson A. We'll weave the lessons through the message. Past failures can be forgiven in love. Don't quit. I want you to hear that, even though that may sound like what you've heard before on other occasions. I think it needs to be heard again. Past failures can be forgiven in love. Don't quit. Now, why would I draw that lesson from this 17th verse? Well, you see, Peter's concept, because of his temperament, was in order for you to be used, you need to earn the right to serve. In other words, you need to either be perfect or as near perfect as possible. But when one of this temperament fails, it is easy for there to be a deep sense of remorse. I quit. It's a message from the enemy that says, "Aha, see there? When Jesus was tried and being found guilty, you, Peter, had a chance to stand in the lurch and to say, 'Wait, I'm one of his followers.' But you didn't." Now, all of this is in Peter's head, you see. And he failed miserably. In fact, he swore against heaven that he did not know the Lord. He denied the Lord three times publicly. Now, it's on the heels of that failing experience that Jesus says to him, "Do you love me?" But surprises him with, "Tend my sheep." Peter long since forgot about serving. He's the man that wanted to go fishing, remember? In his mind, he was a loser. He hadn't come through when the chips were down, and because of that sense of failure, what I call the loser image, he has just planned on quitting. Peter needed that reminder. The Lord said, "Tend my sheep, Peter." "But I'm a loser." "Get at the sheep business." "But I denied you." "Get at the sheep business, Peter." You see, what do you gain by sitting on the sideline licking your wounds? The great detergent of God's forgiveness is still there. Holds you firmly. In 1937, there was completed the building of the great Golden Gate Bridge. It cost $77 million of our money. It was built in two stages, the first very slowly and the second very rapidly. In the first stage, 23 men fell to their death, and the work ground to a halt because fear paralyzed the workmen. As helplessly they saw their companions plummeting from the structure to the water far below. Finally, an ingenious person thought there needs to be a net. And so they put together for $100,000 the largest net that's ever been built. And they hung that net beneath the workmen so that phase two, when it began, 10 were saved who fell into that net. And the work proceeded 25% faster. The job was done. And there are some who will say to you, oh, you teach that kind of love and grace message, you'll build a cheap life into your people. Really? I don't think there's anything like security and love and mercy to give quality to life. That's a message of intelligent hope. That's an intrinsic motivation that takes all the work away from me and gives all the glory to the one who deserves it. That's what happens. When you know you are secure in his love and you know that no matter how deep you may stoop, he's there to pick you up. That's grace. And that's what Peter heard that day. Don't you forget it now. You that are on the backwash of a very remorseful experience, let me say to you, you can still be used. The Bible is strewn with the litter of failures. And it didn't stop with the end of the writing of Revelation. The history of the church is filled with leaders who have a track record of failing. Now let's look at the second lesson. Look at verse 18. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were younger, you used to gird yourself and walk wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will gird you and bring you where you do not wish to go. Now this he said, signifying by what death, what kind of death, he would glorify God. Now Jesus is still staring at Peter. Hasn't taken his eyes off that old, wiser disciple. And he told Peter about his past, and then he said something about his future. As he looked into his past, he told Peter the kind of man he used to be. You read the words in verse 18. You used to gird yourself. You used to walk wherever you wished. It's a picture of a self-assured young man, independent, strong-willed, determined, disciplined, capable kind of person. But he said to Peter, you won't always be that way, Peter. Now that my life and the cross life has come across your steps, your path is different. When you grow old, there will be something else that will happen. You won't any longer stretch out your hands where you wish. They'll be stretched out for you. You won't any longer take life as you wish. It will be taken from you. And you'll be led where you do not want to go. What does that mean? Well, it's the picture of a submissive spirit. But the Bible never does tell us how Peter died. Eusebius does in his book on ecclesiastical history, the third volume. He opens the the veil in Peter's path, in Peter's life as he died. It was in about 61 AD, under Nero's rule, that Peter and his wife were imprisoned. He had wanted to escape from Rome, but the Lord appeared to him in a vision and told him to go back. He did. On the one bleak morning, he was brought to a place of execution, and he witnessed the crucifixion of his wife, who was killed before his eyes. He stood before her, and he said to her, "Remember the Lord." He was taken back to his own dungeon, stayed there overnight, and his submissive spirit to what was ahead of him caused the jailer to embrace Christianity. Just before he died, the jailer received Jesus Christ and received life. Peter, when he came to the place of his crucifixion, stood before it and said, "I'm not worthy to be crucified as my Lord." And he requested that he be crucified feet upwards, head downwards. And he was. He was led to where he did not wish to go. His arms were stretched out against his wishes, his flesh, and his life was taken from him as he was crucified upside down. It's a moving picture, isn't it? Vivid. It's the picture of a man who really could not predict his future. And that's the lesson God wanted him to learn. This we'll call lesson B. The first lesson had to do with not quitting. God can still use you even though you failed, Peter. Here's the second. Present lifestyle is no guarantee of the same future. Don't predict. Present lifestyle is no guarantee of the same future. Don't predict. I want you to listen to that through the ears of Peter. The Lord told him what kind of death by which he would glorify God. I think that's significant. Not just what kind of death circumstance would bring to pass, but the kind of death God has ordained for you, Peter. With a willing heart, you'll give yourself to death, and God will be glorified. Turn to James chapter 4, will you? Hold your place right here. We'll be right back. Look at James 4, beginning at verse 13. Settle on verse 13 of James 4 for a moment. And I especially want you who feel self-assured, confident, secure, and a bit strong-willed to pay close attention to what we're going to read. It has to do with your future. Come now, you who say, "Today or tomorrow we shall go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit." Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. Mark those words. You do not know. You are just a vapor. The Phillips paraphrase says, a puff of smoke. The Living Bible renders it as uncertain as the morning fog. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and also do this or that. You hear what James is saying? If the Lord wills, first of all, we'll live. And second, if the Lord wills, we will do this or that. Those are the words of a submissive heart. But as it is, verse 16 adds, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. What's it saying? We shouldn't plan. We shouldn't map out our lives with goals in mind. That doesn't say that. It says, leave room in your life for those uncertain parentheses, which are inevitable. Leave room for a premature death. Leave room for failure in business. Leave room for God to interrupt and say, no, that's not the direction. You now go in this direction. You want to know the best proof of the unpredictability of your future? Your past. Okay? 5 years ago. Can you believe what's happened in these last 5 years? There's a smile on most of your faces. Some of you have gotten married and you swore you would never get married. Others of you have gotten married and you're now swearing. Some of you had plans for a business and it fell through. Others of you had plans for a corporate planning program, sort of a composite or group work, and it never multiplied. Or I should say, on the other hand, it has gone crazy. You've never made so much money in all your life. Others of you 5 years ago were up here on the scale. Now you're down here economically. Some of you thought you would be on the mission field and you're at home. Others of you thought you would be home and you're in the mission field. That's what Peter has to learn here in verse 18 of John 21, verse 19. Peter, you're strong now while you're young, but let me say to you, Peter, back off. Your hands will be stretched and your body will be girded and you will not plan it that way. William Ernest Henley composed a humanistic piece of philosophy that all of us have heard. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Henley was a disillusioned man. He hadn't heard God's voice. You're never the captain of your fate. You're never the master of your soul. You try to be. You see, Christians, our problem is we don't want to be sheep. We want to be shepherds. Right? Right. We don't want to be the bride. We want to be the groom. We don't want to be the recipients. We want to be the movers. We're Peters by nature. I had walked life's way with an easy tread. I had traveled where pleasures and comfort led. Until one day in a quiet place, I met the master face to face. With station and rank and wealth for my goal, much thought for my body, but none for my soul. I had entered to win this life's mad race. When I met the master face to face, I had built my castles and reared them high. Till their towers had pierced the blue of the sky. I'd sworn to rule with an iron mace. Till I met the master face to face. I met him and knew him and blushed to see that his eyes, full of sorrow, were fixed upon me. I faltered and fell at his feet that day while my castles melted. Vanished away, melted and vanished, and in their place naught else could I see but my master's face. My thoughts are now for the souls of men. I've lost my life, like Colson, like Peter. I've lost my life to find it again since that day in the quiet place where I met the master face to face.
The Christian life begins the moment we truly meet the Master face to face. You're listening to Insight for Living. Chuck Swindoll titled today's message with a question from Peter, and what about this man? To listen to any portion of this study again, you can find downloadable audio files online at insightworld.org. Well, perhaps Chuck's teaching has motivated you to think more deeply about meeting the Master face to face. We've set aside a free CD to help you take your next steps. This CD contains one of Chuck's messages on a similar topic. It's titled, Stop Drifting Along and Start Digging In. You're invited to request a copy of this CD at no cost or obligation by following the simple instructions at insight.org/dig. This offer is only valid in the U.S. Again, the free CD message is titled, Stop Drifting Along and Start Digging In, and the offer is only valid in the United States. At this point in the month of September, many of our students are returning to campus, and lots of parents and grandparents are returning from summer vacation. It means that most of us are facing a busy fall season. Well, to help you keep focused on your spiritual health, you may want to purchase the brand new devotional book from Chuck. It's titled, Good Morning, Lord, Can We Talk? This book contains a year of reflective readings designed to help you set aside what's urgent in order to focus on what's truly important in your life. You can purchase a copy of Chuck's devotional book by going to insight.org. Or if you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. Thanks for remembering that while the purchase of resources is helpful, it's your voluntary donations that fuel the ministry of Insight for Living. Every dollar donated above and beyond the cost of resources is channeled directly into providing this program on your station. So thanks for doing your part to make Chuck Swindoll's teaching available. Again, if you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org. I'm Dave Spiker. Tomorrow, Chuck Swindoll continues his study in the final chapter of John, right here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, And What About This Man?, was copyrighted in 1976, 1988, 2000, and 2018, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2018 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.